This is David Wayne, and you're listening to Monitor, the best weekend way to stay in the know while you're on the go. In a bit over 2 minutes, meet a lady whose battle against arthritis is documented in her book containing valuable advice and information. Dean Martin is first in line with Glory of Love.
You gotta give a little, take a little, and let your poor heart break a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love.
That's the story of love.
You gotta laugh a little, cry a little, before the cloud rolls by a little. That's the story of, that's the glory of love.
That's the story of love.
As long as there's the two of us, we've got the world and all its charms. And when the world is through with us, we've got each other's arms. You gotta win a little,
woman's struggle against a dread disease that afflicts 12 million Americans and is a national problem is described by Faith Perkins in her book, My Fight with Arthritis. The book is not as grim as its title might imply. It's written in an amusing and vivid style and is also packed with valuable information and advice for those arthritics who annually spend millions of dollars in pursuit of quack cures. Mrs. Perkins retells her story and offers some simple rules for arthritis sufferers as she talks with Monitor reporter Tex Antoine.
Mrs. Perkins, your struggle against arthritis involved much more than just a matter of health. As your book puts it, your fight was not only against pain, but against deceit. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, the deceivers are the people who tell arthritics that they can be cured or that there is some simple thing that will control arthritis. Legitimate doctors don't do that, but the world is so full of those who are waiting to prey on arthritics that they have. A good survey has shown that arthritics spend $250 million, $250 million a year on quack cures.
On quack cures?
Yes, cures that are not going to help them.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, and it usually comes from people who can't very well afford it either, which is sad. But that includes the devices that they sell you and even liniments and salves and things like that, and the clinics that are misleading people. There are several of those about the country, rather large ones, some of them, that take patients and say that they're going to be improved, and often they're made much worse.
Well, even though arthritis is far from funny, you have maintained a certain sense of humor throughout some very difficult years. Could you tell us some of the amusing things in connection with your experiences?
Well, of course, the quacks are the most amusing. And not only that, the folk cures are amusing, too. People will tell you such fantastic things to do, and they'll be so sure they're right. You could wear a snakeskin belt next to your skin, or you could put sulfur in your shoes. Or like the taxi driver the other day told me to put sulfur in gin and take it. His,
internally or externally?
I think he meant internally because it was his grandmother who was cured, his grandmother in Poland. And, of course, your friends are so well-meaning, even though they tell you such contradictory things. I met a man on the plane who said, well, now, all you have to do is take a lot of grapefruit juice. My mother took it till it just ran out her ears, practically. And the next person you meet said, now, you know very well that you should never touch citrus fruits. And you could make all your cures contradict each other if you just arranged them in the right way.
Oh, Miss Perkins, in your opinion, what is the most important single piece of advice you could pass along to anyone in our audience who is arthritic?
Well, for one thing, don't get discouraged and don't think that the sky is falling and that you aren't going to get better. Because arthritis does remiss sometimes by on its own account. That's another reason where the cracks move in, because you do give up. The arthritis gives up, and you think whatever you're doing cures it. But don't take the advice of friends or relatives, and don't fall for that old deceitful thing, well, it won't hurt to try. Because it may hurt to try, and it will at least delay good treatment. And now they do know so much more about arthritis. And then the person himself must try very hard, too. You can't give up. You have to exercise every day. Three rules I have that helped me more than any. Two were given me by a doctor, and one was exercise every muscle every day. Not too much, but just keep on doing it. The other was never get tired. You slip backwards whenever you do. Arthritis, that's a symptom of it, that you get this tremendous weariness all of a sudden. That's another thing families should understand. And then my own rule that I added to that is never hurry. What panics me, and that is hard to learn, because an arthritic is usually the type of person that's pretty intense and likes to go full speed ahead. And to learn to slow down is one of the most important things.
Well, when a person becomes afflicted with arthritis, what are your suggestions for the use of their time and their energies? You say that most have a great drive.
Well, particularly, it's important first to go to a doctor and find out what treatment you should be taking. And the more honest the doctor, the more problem he faces, because he doesn't always know which kind of treatment to use and which the patient will respond to, and several may have to be tried. And to get good medical advice and follow it, the Arthritis Foundation puts out some very important books, booklets, many of which are free, and they have organizations in almost every state, and sometimes several. One could go there and get good, helpful information. Then, of course, it'd be nice if they all read my book, wouldn't it?
It would certainly be nice.
So My Fight with Arthritis, it was written for other arthritics. I don't pretend to give cures, but I do pretend to say how an arthritic can learn to live with the disease and function and carry on in spite of it in many cases.
Well, I'm sure they'll find a great deal of that help in your book, and thank you very much, Mrs. Perkins, for taking a few moments out from a very busy schedule to stop by and talk with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
We've had the pleasure of talking with Mrs. Faith Perkins, author of the book My Fight with Arthritis, A Woman of Great Strength and Courage. This is Tex Antoine for Monitor.
That falls softly on the meadow. Birds high up on the trees serenade the flowers with their melodies. Oh, see there beyond the hill the bright colors of the rainbow. Some magic from above made this day for us just to fall in love. Now I belong to you from this day until forever. Just love me tenderly and I'll give to you every part of me. Long lonely nights without love.
A brief word on behalf of the United Negro College Fund. You can help many thousands of bright but economically disadvantaged young people to fulfill their potential. All you need do is contribute to the United Negro College Fund. Some 32,000 young Americans are being trained in the 33 United Negro Colleges, and your support makes possible more scholarships, teachers, and books. So send your contribution to the United Negro College Fund, 22 East 54th Street, New York City, 22. Ever heard the Mexicali Singers? You will, 1 minute from now, so stay on the monitor beacon. This week at the 23rd Soviet Party Congress, the Russian citizen was promised the good life, including a 5-day week, guaranteed income, no income tax, a retail price reduction, increased pensions, better schools, and more recreational and cultural programs. Promises, promises, promises. Here's the perfect postscript, the Mexicali Singers and a Taste of Honey.
What's up at American Motors Rambler Dealers? Sales. Sales jumped 38% in February. 38%. In fact, as February came to a close, people were buying American Motors cars at the fastest rate since 64. We think we know why. Our new Rambler American is the Acceleration Champ Class 6 Pure Oil Performance Trials. Our big new Rambler Classic is bolder, more powerful than ever, and it's our hottest seller. And our new Ambassador is the luxury car that a young man can afford right now. So don't wait any longer. See your American Motors Rambler dealer now during his big win weeks. There's never been a better time. American Motors cars are built to keep their value, built with you and your safety in mind. Every minute of every working day, two more families make their choice a new American Motors car. Because quality is built in, not added on.
Among our group of regulars who drop in for a few moments of comment and opinion is the irrepressible writer-comedian Selma Diamond. Selma's travels have taken her to many places, and she's offered some unusual observations in the past. But this time, her remarks are directed to a situation close to home. Perhaps you'll agree with her as you listen to Selma Diamond.
With all the important social reforms and freedom movements that are making this the great society, Somebody has got to organize and free the American woman from the snobbery of salespeople in some of our better dress shops. I'm not kidding. I find that when I go shopping, and if I'm not all dressed up like I'm going to sit on the dais of a Hadassah luncheon, I can forget it. And you know what gets me? Is that the sales lady who comes over, elegantly coiffed, carries on like I don't know that on her morning off, she gets the whole thing done for nothing at the Clairol Hair Coloring Training School. Once, I pointed to a dress I'd like to see, and before the sales lady even let me near it, she told me how much it costs. So I said to her, take a chance. Maybe I can afford it. And if it's the middle of winter, they show you resort clothes. So I said to her, I want something to wear now. So she gives me, this is what her clientele is wearing now in Palm Springs. Her clientele. How do you like that? She's a sales lady in a department store, and suddenly she's talking like she's a CPA. So I said to her, I'm looking for a winter dinner dress to wear now up north. So she really lets me know what a peasant I am, and she says, why don't you look on our markdown rack? And this snobbery not only goes on in women's shops, I have been told by men shoppers that if a man walks into certain Madison Avenue men's stores wearing a white tie, forget it. Now, it so happens that I come from a long line of cloak and suiters and retail shopkeepers. And believe me, when you walked into my father's store, if you bought or not, if I was around, my father called me in and I did the Holland Fling. And if I wasn't around, my dog did the Holland Fling. And if there was a birthday party or a wedding coming up in my family, you were all invited.
Ah, yes. Who could forget those memorable events in the Diamond Family album? Certainly their customers never will. You can keep posted on the wanderings and thoughts of writer-comedian Anselma Diamond when she makes her frequent stops at Monitor. That was Bert Kempfert's orchestra playing That Happy Feeling. Monitor is the spot for That Happy Feeling every weekend across the nation. In Eugene, Oregon, folks hear us on KUGN. A brief moment for the NBC station nearest you right now, then we'll be back. This is David Wayne.
Relax your weekend away with Monitor on the NBC Radio Network.
This is David Wayne on the first Saturday in the month of April, and Monitor is with it.
Come on, baby, let's tell all the people we found a way to end the blues. Let's get together and just start a rumor that everyone will think is news. Love is fine, love is fine, love is yours, love is mine, love is free, love is true, love is me, love is you. Baby, let's tell all the people that love is such a wonderful thing. Let's get together and just start a notion that everybody else can sing. Love is warm, love is fine, love is yours, love is mine, love is free, love is true, love is me, love is you. Together and just got a habit that everybody else can try. Love is warm, love is fine, love is yours, love is mine, love is free, love is true, love is me, love is you. The love is still the greatest yet. Let's get together and just start a gimmick that nobody else can forget. Love is warm, love is fine, love is yours, love is mine, love is free, love is true, love is me, love is you. Love is warm, love is fine, love is yours, love is mine, love is free, love is true, love is me.
And for that, we can thank Connie Francis. Comedian Jackie Mason is not shy, but he's honest. The title of his first comedy album was I'm the Greatest Comedian in the World, Only Nobody Knows It Yet. His father and his three brothers are all rabbis, and his three sisters all married rabbis. He was a rabbi himself for a while and admitted, in my sermons, I used to throw in some light stuff. Jackie Mason is just as honest when discussing what makes a star or a career, and he is in the following visit with Monitor reporter Jack Eigen.
You have some pretty strong opinions about stars and who is a star and what makes a star. Is that right, Jackie?
Well, yes, I have strong opinions about everything. I don't see why I should leave this subject out. I know that many of us have opinions about stars and what makes a star, and very many people think differently on the same subject. Some people think that every star is talented or is brilliant. Some people think that the whole business is a fraud, that it's all rock, and that no talent at all means nothing. I don't think that this is a subject that's either black or white. I don't think that every star stinks or that every stiff could make it, and I don't think that that talent doesn't make any difference. I think that in the long run, talent is a great help in a career, and it's very, very important. But I think it's also true that in this business being what it is, that very often the most talented people in the world will never make it, and some people who have no talent at all will, because it doesn't depend strictly on talent. Talent is only one of the factors that create success.
Well, how about those?
Success.
How about those who do not have talent? How do they make it in show business and become stars without talent?
They make it through a certain vehicle. Let's assume I got no talent at all, or I'm just a mediocre performer, but I'm adequate for a certain kind of a part. Now, ordinarily, I wouldn't particularly be noticed because my talent by myself, within itself, would not be so fantastic or so unusual that I could become a star from it. The example is Hello, Dolly. The show was such a sensation that Carol Channing became a fantastic star from it. She was a star before, but she became even greater because of it. Then Mary Martin did it, and she looked fantastic in it. Then Betty Grable, who's a pretty good actress, but I haven't heard any great accolades about her fantastic acting talent. She's doing it in Las Vegas, and she's getting raves for it.
And, of course, you have Ginger Rogers on Broadway.
Ginger Rogers on Broadway is a sensation in it, too. I think that almost anybody who's just about adequate looks great doing a great part in a great play. And I say that because you look great doing it, if you have the first opportunity to open with it on Broadway, you become heralded as a sensational star because of the part and the show. On the other hand, you can have... You can have an exceptional quality and come out on a play that stinks. And if the play is derided and destroyed by the critics, you'll go down with it and you won't be noticed. What turns out to what could have been a fantastic break becomes nothing at all.
They say that when a singer goes to watch another singer perform, she kind of roots for her. A dancer roots for another dancer. But they say that the most jealous lot are the comedians. That one comedian, he'd like to sort of run out of a nightclub or a place of entertainment when the fellow on stage is getting a lot of laughs. Would you go along with that?
I wouldn't go along with one word of that. Not that I'm here to protect comedians. I think comedians are as different one from the other as one businessman is from another. But let's be honest about it. Jealousy is a pretty common thing, and it's just as common in one profession as the next. Why should a singer be less jealous of another singer than a comedian of another comedian? Whoever told you that must be a singer. Ask a comedian, I'll tell you it's about the singers.
How do you feel about yourself, Jackie
Mason? I feel that I'm a fantastic entertainer, and I happen to know I'm a brilliant performer. I am not disturbed if somebody else does good. I know they can't do as good as me. And even if it looks great, it's nothing compared to what I do. So
with that very good review of yourself, we leave Jackie Mason as he pats himself on the back, looking at himself in the mirror, as he leaves our monitor studio. Jackie Mason, I want to thank you very much.
Why not? I worked for nothing.
This is Jack Eigen, NBC Chicago, for Monitor.
Hello, lover. Where did you go, lover? It's been a year today since you have gone away. Welcome home.
Jordan Christopher and Hello Lover. Beginning Monday, NBC's weekday series Emphasis says hello to a new feature. It's Critic East, Critic West with Edwin Newman and Tom Pettit, and it'll bring you sharp, definitive social comment on every aspect of today's world. Of course, all the regulars, Chet Huntley, Frank Blair, Arlene Francis, Merrill Muller, Bill Cullen, and Barbara Walters will continue to make Emphasis stimulating, informative, required listening Monday through Friday on NBC Radio. Meet a Millionaire in 1 minute here on the Monitor Beacon. Monitor once again, and David Wayne here. Houston oil tycoon R.E. Bob Smith. He's a man who brought the National League Baseball franchise to Houston and was instrumental in the building of the Astrodome. He's one of Houston's most influential men and biggest landowners, and he offers an interesting profile of himself as he talks with Monitor reporter Lee Tucker of NBC station KPRC in Houston.
Mr. Smith, why did you want to become a millionaire?
Oh, I don't know. It wasn't by plan, I'll tell you that.
But what motivated you?
I would be afraid to make that statement. I accept it. It happened. It just happened, that's all.
Have you ever been poor?
Oh, yes. I imagine I have been, as well as everybody else that's ever done any good.
What one quality has helped you the most in making your fortune?
Oh, I think being exposed to it, being willing to lay your money on the line whenever you found it necessary to do that.
Do you depend on other people much, or would you say you run a one-man show?
No, absolutely not. I depend a lot on people. In other words, I give people responsibility and expect the results. That's all that I can add to it. They're good people, all of them. All the people connected with me have been culled out until they are all good people.
How far did you go in school?
I finished high school. That's all.
Who played the biggest part in your early years, your mother or your father?
My father.
What sort of guidance or inspiration did he give?
Well, he gave me the best that he knew how, and that happened to be good guidance. Now, whether I followed it or not, I don't know about that one.
How important is a good memory in achieving success?
Well, I think it's very important. And I think people with a limited education such as I had depend a great lot on their memory rather on their education.
What would you say is the biggest problem of having money?
Oh, I don't know if there's any problem connected with it. It's a very pleasant thing to have. You can always do what you want to.
Well, Mr. Smith, are you happy?
Yes, sir. I try to be. I have a very fine wife and two very fine daughters. And they do everything possible to make me happy. And I stay happy, I think, all the time.
You worry?
I don't worry. As far as I know, I don't. I wouldn't say that I don't, but I'd say that as far as I know it, I don't. I do not.
How do you relax?
Well, I go to the health club, the President's Club, and I work out 2 hours every day and try to go there every day.
How important do you think being in good physical condition is?
I think it's very important. In other words, I liken it a whole lot to an automobile. I keep an automobile in good condition. I try to keep my body in good condition.
Do you know other millionaires?
Oh, several of them.
You like to be in their company?
No, I'd rather not because I know a lot of people that let money make a difference to them.
Have people ever tried to discourage you on a deal that you believed in?
Oh, yes. And I haven't listened to that at all. I've used my own judgment. Sometimes it's bad.
What advice would you have for young men who want to become wealthy?
Well, I don't have any except that I would tell everybody to get an education. Get an education because the average person now is educated.
We've been talking to R.E. Bob Smith, Texan who made his fortune in the oil business. This is Lee Tucker in Houston.
Now you take John Gary, not exactly a millionaire maybe, but a fellow who certainly knows where his next hit is coming from. In fact, it may just be his newest one titled Don't Let the Music Play.
Our favorite song tears me all apart. Think of love and a broken heart. Why did she ever go? Song would make everything go.
In one moment, Jim Simpson reports on the development of the world's most popular game, soccer. Monitor Sports is brought to you by Plymouth Fury, Belvedere, Valiant, Barracuda, Plymouth 60.
There goes another Plymouth. Plymouth sales have more than doubled in the last 3 years. And no wonder our hot sales pace continues with the new Plymouth Fury. This most exciting Plymouth ever has safety rim wheels, safety door handles, solid unibody construction, and engine options all the way up to a four-barrel, 440 cubic inch Commando V8. There goes another Plymouth. Time after time, day after day, somebody new wakes up, takes off with Plymouth's own special brand of performance. Isn't it time you let yourself go with our most exciting, most inviting Fury at your Plymouth dealers? Plymouth, a great car by Chrysler Corporation. There goes another one.
This is Jim Simpson speaking for Monitor Sports. Soccer's biggest moment, the World Cup, this year takes place in England, and the matches have been sold out for weeks. If a professional football championship or a top college game creates excitement in this country, imagine if you can. A football championship, and soccer is called football in most of the world, which involves national teams from all over Europe, South America, and the South Pacific. The matches are not all held in the same stadium, but that matters little. All the matches in all of the stadiums are sold out. Soccer is growing in this country and seeking support. Yet, it is a fact that our American teams seldom get beyond the first round in Olympic or an international competition without falling before a much more experienced and competitive team from overseas. But England especially may be forgiven if it shows fierce pride in the game of soccer. For after all, that is where it all began centuries ago. The best guesses are that the English started the game of soccer sometime in the middle of the 11th century. And instead of a field of specified dimensions, the goals were in different towns. It is also said that when a team of soccer players would rush into a town, kicking the ball, yelling and pushing, they would terrify the townsmen who would shut up their shops and their homes. But so many Englishmen came to like the game of soccer, or football as it became known in the 12th century, that they all began to play the game and forgot to practice another sport, which also involved the welfare of the English monarchy, archery. King Henry II was so alarmed about his country's safety that he abolished football, and everybody went back to their bows and arrows. It wasn't until the 16th century that football came back, and it was the Irish who brought it back with their game of Gaelic football. But the Irish played nearly in seclusion for fear of being caught. In 1603, King James I took over the English throne, and about the same time, firearms had replaced bows and arrows. And so, the new monarch allowed his subjects to go back to their beloved game of football, and they've been wild about it ever since. The British game, which since has captured the world, has been strictly a kicking game. No one is allowed to pick up the ball and run with it. Yet, some in the middle of the 19th century began to pick up the ball and run with it, and by the 20th century, they were throwing the ball. They are the sports of rugby and American-style football. And now that there are all kinds of football, many wonder which is the best. Others will argue that their favorite kind of football is the best. But nearly every impartial observer will tell you that Gaelic football, played by the Irish, is the roughest. A little bit more than 100 years ago, there used to be 34 men to a side, and was more like a world war than a game. Punching at the ball was permitted, and more often than not, you punched an opponent instead of the ball. Well, even the Irish began to think that that mayhem was a little ridiculous, and now there are only 15 men to a team, but you can still punch at the ball. And as hundreds of years ago, more often than not, you hit the opponent rather than the ball. But to get back to soccer. In Europe today, players are purchased and traded among the continent's teams in whopping sales that make the front pages of even the most conservative British newspapers. The English hope that this is their year. And so remember, as we approach summer and those World Cup soccer matches in England, what excitement there must be building there. The English invented the game. That was centuries ago. And now, here in the 20th century, the English would like to win the game. This is Jim Simpson for Monitor Sports.
You're always sure of the best sports coverage every weekend on Monitor. Evans Orchestra and Dusty Road. This week in Amarillo, Texas, a lady driver was all set to drive on a dusty or any other kind of a road, but all she had was a set of license plates. While she was inside the courthouse buying her new plates, her car was stolen. We'll steal away now for 5 minutes of the latest news. NBC Monitor News on the hour, so stay right where you are. This is David Wayne.
This is Frank Blair. I'm happy to welcome two new members to Emphasis, Edwin Newman and Tom Pettit, with Emphasis Critic East, Critic West, starting Monday on NBC Radio.
Every room in every Holiday Inn in over 500 cities in the United States, Canada, Puerto Rico, and the Bahamas has a copy of the Holiday Inn magazine waiting for you. The Holiday Inn magazine is published monthly for those staying at Holiday Inns. It's an attractive magazine. It's one of the standard free services at all Holiday Inns. In the Holiday Inn magazine, you'll find beautifully illustrated articles about travel, people, and life in this wonderful country of ours. There are delicious recipes, games to play, and many other things that will interest you. You may take the magazine with you when you leave. Many people now subscribe to the Holiday Inn magazine. The latest issue tells you how to do this. When you stay at Holiday Inns, the magazine is waiting for you in the room. One of the many standard free services provided at all Holiday Inns. Your host from coast to coast.
It's 10 o'clock.